It's Debatable.
Hello and welcome. You are listening to It's Debatable on Campus FM. The frequency is 102.7. I am Darren Katkuti, your host for the next half hour. In politics, polarization is the process by which the public opinion divides and goes to the extremes. It can also refer to when the extreme factions of a political party gain dominance. In either case, moderate voices often lose power and influence as a consequence. International relations scholars and political scientists principally measure polarization in two ways. Generic polarization, often referred to as popular polarization, which happens when opinions diverge towards poles of distribution or density, and partisan polarization, which happens when support for a political figure or position differentiates itself along political party lines. Joining me now on It's Debatable is our academic contributor for today, Dr. Isabel Kalea. I welcome you to It's Debatable, Dr. Kalea.
Hello, Darren. I'm very happy to be here.
Dr. Kalea, can you provide us with a definition of political polarization to start with?
Sure. Well, democratic systems are normally characterized by the existence of numerous parties representing the interests of diverse groups in that society, thus, therefore, expressing the existence of party competition. Duverger was the first political scientist to develop a systematic theory of party systems. He argued that party systems had a natural tendency towards two-partyism, and that this tendency was sociologically rooted. In fact, he tells us, whenever public opinion is squarely faced with great fundamental problems, it tends to crystallize around two opposing poles, namely radicals and conservatives. Duverger also argued that a number of factors can impede this natural development, one of them being the possibility that the moderate versus extremist dimension within the party system becomes more important than the radical versus the conservative, in other words, than the left versus right dimension. In this case, centrifugal forces produce splits in the two major parties, and the extremist elements will shift towards the poles of what we call the left-right political spectrum, i.e. the model on which the parties place themselves according to their ideology. In this case, the system becomes polarized.
Right. So we know that there is a certain degree of political polarization in the international scenario. However, Dr. Kalea, can you tell us how can we avoid political polarization, or is there a way how we can bypass this concept?
Ideally, for a functioning democracy, parties should locate themselves at the center of the spectrum, thus indicating a potential for moderate views, and indicating their ability to compromise and encourage a positive-sum game and societal harmony. However, when parties with extremist views locate themselves at the poles of the spectrum, this, of course, indicates an ability to compromise and encourage a zero-sum game. And what follows is the rise of societal conflict. In this situation, we talk of a polarized system of society. One such example is Nazi Germany between the wars. So to reiterate here, basically, in order to ensure that politics does not become polarized, you need a society and you need a political system and a political elite that are prepared to compromise.
Dr. Kalea, at this point, do you believe that polarization then occurs in all party systems?
Well, Sartori reassessed Duverger's dynamic and argued that this phenomenon of polarization that can occur in two-party or multi-party systems can take several forms, but ultimately it tends to be found in all types of party systems, the two most common being that of moderate pluralism and that of polarized pluralism. In the first case, you get two parties or more than two parties may exist, but the system works as a two-party system with government and oppositions carrying out moderate politics. Such cases are the French and German political systems. In these cases, most of the countries are therefore moderate and of moderate leaning. And centripetal forces are at work, i.e. forces that bring the people together. Here we talk about moderate pluralism. However, in polarized pluralism, numerous parties compete and are highly ideological, and the system becomes very fragmenting, reflecting a society that is highly fragmented along the lines of class or ethnicity or religion, and the risk becomes polarized in the context of these issues. Alternatives to this model, however, are two-party systems that also can become polarized. So two-party systems are not always moderately pluralized. They can become more excessively polarized, for instance, American and Canadian systems.
Mm-hmm.
In both the House and the Senate, the most conservative Democrat is more liberal than is the most liberal Republican. Dominance by one party, for instance, in the Italian party system in the 70s and 80s and the Canadian system today, also leads to centrist dominance, encouraging centrifugal tendencies elsewhere. In other words, polarizing opinion towards the center. So forms of polarization tend to exist in nearly every type of party system. But of course, it varies from party system to party system.
I'm glad that you're mentioning these points of the American and Canadian political polarization. In fact, my two guests for today later on will be speaking about these points specifically. However, can you tell us something about the Maltese party system? Is political polarization that evident in our party system?
Well, in Malta, the party system in recent years has functioned largely on the principle of moderate pluralism, with two main parties endeavouring to monopolise the centre of the political spectrum. However, there have been points in time where very different ideological stances or approaches has polarised the system. This includes the 1960s, where polarisation occurred around the religious cleavage, and the early 1980s, where the system became polarised around problems of institutional design. In the 1990s, the parties also became somewhat polarized on approaches to foreign policy, coalesced around EU membership. At present, there are also those that argue that the system is once again becoming polarized over social issues such as divorce, though a multiplicity of views can be observed in both the main parties, leading to the mm-hmm. conclusion that it is fragmentation and polarization of party systems. That is also a possibility, but we may also talk about realigning the party system or de-aligning the party system rather than actual polarization of the party system.
Certainly, you have raised a lot of valid points on which we can build our discussion later on with my two guests for today, Ian Borge and Stefan Dermanin. I thank you very much for joining us, Dr. Kaleya, and we hope to speak to you again some other time on It's Debatable. The debate on political polarization continues right after this short break, and I invite you all to stay tuned and keep listening to Campus FM. The frequency is 103.7. On today's show of It's Debatable, we shall be exploring political polarization and its current effects in the international scenario. Remember that you can join our conversation with your questions and comments by sending an email on info@mrsa.org.mt or by logging on our online forum on mrsa.org.mt. Joining me now is our academic contributor for today, Dr. Isabel Kaleya, Head of International Relations Department and Lecturer in Political Movements and Political Patterns at the University of Malta, and second-year international relations students Ian Borch and Stefan Dermanin. I welcome you all to It's Debatable.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Kaleya, let me start with you, and I invite you to explain the facts for us. Thank you for joining us with that introduction, Dr. Kaleya. Certainly, it was nice to have you on our show, and we hope to speak to you again some other time on It's Debatable. The debate on political polarization now continues with my other two guests for today, Ian Borch and Stefan Dermanin, second-year international relations students. Stefan, let me start with you. Can you explain to our listeners the difference between electoral polarization and party polarization?
Yes, basically, electoral polarization is a division of partisan loyalties to two particular parties, which would normally be translated into a consistent voting behavior to the same political parties. Party polarization is the ideological division between different parties, according to the interest groups they represent. This is generally characterized by a lack of consensus on the most fundamental issues dominating the political scene.
Keeping in mind that the development of political polarization in Western Europe does not share the same historical trajectory, it is best to say that political polarization basically varies from one country to another. What can you tell us about this?
I think this is because the timing of the Industrial Revolution and secularization, which are thought to be the causes of many divisions, vary from one country to another. For example, the decline of political polarization in Britain is thought to have started immediately after the war, where the dominant parties agreed on the role that the government should have in the economy, while in France it is thought that only since Mitterrand came to power in the 80s has polarization properly declined, because of his pursuit of market-friendly policies which traditionally converge with the right.
Right. Ian, polarization in our political system can turn into extremes, and that's where problems start appearing, where conflicts upon controversial issues and instability become inevitable, basically. What can you tell us about this?
Yes, therefore, as a matter of fact, dangerous outcomes will arise. Parties, in such a political scenario, rather than trying to use persuasive and calm tactics, parties become more prone to use coercive and harsh methods against each other. These bring into account harsh and extreme ambitions, always with the scope to beat their opponents, from where ultimately violence will be more likely to take place. For instance, let's take the interwar years. During this period, a number of laws and policies were implied by right-wing governments against the left, in order to repress as much as possible the communist and socialist activists from embarking their voice through demonstrations and revolutions.
So certainly, from what you are saying here, witnessed a process of escalation.
Yes, definitely. Basically, such a process raising strong stereotypes, evident also in Malta between the Labour and Nationalist supporters, sometimes even constructing enemy depictions against the other sides, against the opposite sides, as if the opposing supporters don't live in the same country. So suspicions, provocations, misinterpretations, accusations, and also lack of communication are all forces of escalation, which in due course make it easier for polarization to be reinforced within a political system.
Right. Ian, also I would like to talk to you about polarization in the interwar period.
Yes.
Certainly, we witnessed the emergence of a left and right cleavage, and in the aftermath of World War I, Europe became highly polarized in political terms.
Yes.
What can you tell us about this?
Yes, following the brutal war, a bewildering political turmoil and unrest fought throughout the whole continent. Europe responded to a new crisis by splitting between those supporters who favored the solutions of the far left and those who supported the policies of the far right. Therefore, there was the rise of a political cleavage between the left-right spectrum. While the right wing was proposing a laissez-faire economy, the left, through its socialist-communist character, challenged such a concept. It was a period where the same peak polarization was manifested in street demonstrations, general strikes, violence, national revolutions, fall of republics, like what happened in Germany with the fall of the...
Weimar Republic.
Yes. And even civil wars, as what happened in Spain in 1936 between the left and right forces. However, evidently, as history shows, the right was far more stronger than the divided left,
exactly,
which ultimately left the latter to be recoiled.
Right. Stefan, back to you now. In your research, you have concluded that political polarization has largely declined in Western Europe in our current scenario. Can you explain better why did this happen?
Basically, this has started to shift in the 50s and the 60s, where political parties started to become more flexible and inclusive and less ideological in order to incorporate a larger list of vested interests, to increase support. Instead of supporting a cleavage group, political parties tried to reach the best compromise between cleavages. This was the case in Britain, where the collectivist consensus is said to have occurred, where all major political parties agreed that the state should take expanded responsibility for economic governance and provide social welfare.
Mm-hmm.
Right-wing parties started to appeal to working classes. Left-wing parties started to appeal to the middle classes. The emergence of the mass consumer society after the war, which cut across the old class and religious interests, led the political parties to go beyond their traditional constituencies and give first priority to the goal of maximizing votes.
Right. I thank you all for sharing with us these interesting observations. My guests for today are Ian Borge and Stefan Darmanin, second year international relations students. I hope that our listeners are equally interested in the subject matter which we are discussing today, political polarization. I remind all our listeners that you are listening to It's Debatable on Campus FM. The frequency is 103.7. We shall now stop for a short break. I invite you all to keep listening to Campus FM. Right after the break, the discussion in the studios continues with my two guests for today.
judging by the look in the organ grinder. You'll judge me by the fact that my face don't fit. He's touching that the monkey sits on my shoulder. He's waiting for the day when he gets me. But I don't need no alibi. I'm a puppet on a string. I just need this stage to be seen. We all need a pantomime to remind us what is real. Hold my eye and know what it means. 'Cause I'm out of my mind. I'm out. Sits on my shoulder. He's waiting for the day when he gets me. But I won't be your concubine. I'm a puppet, not a whore. I just need this stage to be seen. Will you be a friend of mine to remind me what is real? Pull my heart and see that it bleeds. 'Cause I'm a man.
Back, you are listening to It's Debatable on Campus FM. The frequency is 103.7. I am Darren Katkuti, your host for today's show. It's Debatable is a conjoint initiative between the Department of International Relations within the University of Malta and MIRSA, the Malta International Relations Student Association. Today we are discussing political polarization. Remember that you can join our debate by posting your questions and comments on our online forum on mirsa.org.mt. My two guests for today are second year international relations students Ian Borch and Stefan Darmanin. Ian, before the break, Stefan was arguing that political polarization has largely declined in Western Europe. However, do you believe that party systems carry different proportions of polarization? I know for a fact that in your research you have concluded that a two-party system can at times be far more stable and conductive to harmony than a multi-party system.
Yes. In fact, in the latter, in a multi-party system, as a result maybe of proportional representation, you can identify an extensive amount of parties which in due course make it more complex to formulate bargains and coalitions, hence bringing instability, which at the same time makes it more difficult for governments to cope and build strategies when problems arise. For instance, this happened in Germany in 1919, where such an unstable environment led the government to fail to get along in the economic crisis. Therefore, as a consequence, parties would be unable to provide citizens those policies which ultimately would meet their demands.
Would meet their demands, you're right. Stefan, I would like to focus on your previous remarks about partisan de-alignment. The more political parties became catch-all, the more sectoral interests were addressed by more parties, one can say.
Yes, the electorate was becoming less inclined in attaching its loyalties to one political party. Voting behavior became increasingly unpredictable and less polarized. However, partisan realignment is more associated with the increasing unpopularity of the catch-all parties. This is because of the general economic crisis in Europe in the 70s, made the electorate increasingly disillusioned with the catch-all parties. In Britain, for example, neither the Conservatives under Heath nor the Labour Party under Wilson and Callaghan seemed able to deal with the situation. Hence, party elites were increasingly portrayed as autonomous and greedy political class, isolated institutionally from citizens. Concurrently, the issue voting model was increasingly replacing party identification model as an indication of voting behavior. People were starting to vote according to the issues at stake, rather than on partisan loyalties.
Right. Also, when discussing this issue of political polarization, certainly at the United States is perhaps the most demonstrates the most notable example of political polarization. For example, evidence indicates that from the 1970s onwards, polarization became stronger amongst the American public supporters, mm-hmm. especially with regards to this concept of information age. What can you tell me about this?
Yes, here? The information age, at hand with the media, played a good role in reinforcing such a phenomenon. Different spectrums of media outlets in the U.S. are providing citizens the opportunity to pick and choose that information, which they want to hear accordingly to their political orientation. Therefore, citizens tend to prefer to watch partisan TV channels and read politically biased sources, which in the end completely strengthen polarization. Other factors would be the existence of the party income divide, at hand also with the traditional secular cleavage, where Democrats in general tend to be more acclimatized to secular ideas, while on the other hand, Republicans are more likely to favor traditionalism.
So you're talking about the administration under President Bush, but
yes.
Under President Barack Obama, polarization didn't disappear either.
Of course not. Instead, many are stating that it completed to strengthen to the extent that contemporarily many critics are considering Obama as a polarized president, especially when recently, as the Gallup report indicates, some issues and reforms completed to bring an augmented polarization. Examples would be those related to the healthcare reform and the economy, resulting in highly polarized approval ratings in Congress. In fact, as the report shows, there was a 68% gap on approving Obama's job, with 81% of the Democrats and 13% of the Republicans approving his two-year performance.
Stefan, back to you. Today we are seeing this rise of new elements such as gender rights, the European Economic Community, and rising environmental awareness, which all may influence and impact upon political polarization and the way it takes its course. What are your thoughts on this?
Basically, they rendered the importance of the other historical cleavages increasingly obsolete, because they cross-cut other differences found in other cleavages. Hence, there cannot be polarization between two social groups, because every group is fragmented by many individuals who might be involved in other cleavages. For example, those who are united under the gender cleavage might be divided by economic or religious cleavages. The more cross-cutting cleavages there are, the more political majorities will be shifting, mm-hmm. favoring or alienating no particular group on a regular basis. In this way, cross-cutting cleavages can be stabilizing in a pluralistic society, because the more individuals are involved in multiple cleavages, the less the electorate is polarized into rigid political blocks.
Right. Ian, any benefits from a polarized political system? Maybe polarization ultimately increased political participation. Maybe citizens became more politically aware and motivated to participate in elections.
Yes, despite mentioning before the negative aspects of political polarization, certainly it brings that political stimulus. For instance, let's take Malta as an example. In Malta, for instance, as a polarized state in nature, during elections, it is always evident that a large percentage of votes go into the ballot boxes, where generally, especially in general elections, more than 90% of the population vote, a big gap when compared to other European states. Hence, such a phenomenon of polarization could also be healthy for democracy, since competition, after all, engages citizens to practice the same democratic values, while at the same time hold political parties and their political allies too accountable for their same performances.
Right. Stefan, also, did polarization completely disappear from the Western world?
Political polarization, basically, I think, had largely disappeared in the Western world, or at least not comparable to the interwar period.
Okay.
However, today, polarization today can be expressed in terms of the growth of factionalism within party structures, that is, a group of individuals that band together to achieve specific goals and policy positions within a political party. for example, the socialist campaign group, a faction within the Labour Party in Britain, which was highly critical of the new Labour project proposed by Tony Blair. However, the existence of a factional system as well can have other serious negative consequences. If factional strife becomes intensive and public, the party may suffer from perceptions of disunity. If the conflict is particularly severe, it may cause ruptures within the parties that seriously threaten its effectiveness. A climate of intense factional conflict can also motivate individuals to focus on attacking their factional enemies rather than furthering the interests of the party. And secondly, my concluding point is that we must keep in mind that although political scientists argue that the less polarization there is, the more democracies consolidate, others argue that the decline of polarization may explain the declining voting turnout in Europe. This is because an eventual absence of cleavages may lead to a situation where the electorate is less motivated to vote.
Ian, you have argued in favor of polarization that when it comes to extreme, it could be very dangerous, and therefore a moderate approach is necessary.
Yes,
what
of
can
course.
You tell us about
I
this?
I think that one needs to take a moderate approach towards polarization. It's true that, like how I've observed earlier, when polarization comes to extremes, it could be very dangerous. However, at the same time, to a certain extent, such a phenomenon raises public interest about both politics in general and also about those decisions and policies taken from their respective governments and parties.
Thank you, Ian and Stefan. Certainly, political polarization is a captivating subject. However, time is not on our side, so I thank you very much for joining us today, and we hope to speak to you again some other time on our future shows. Today, we were discussing political polarization on It's Debatable. Remember that you can join our debate by posting your questions and comments on our online forum on mirsa.org.mt or else by sending an email on info@mirsa.org.mt. It's Debatable is a conjoint initiative between the Department of International Relations within the University of Malta and MIRSA, the Malta International Relations Student Association. A special thank you goes to Dr. Isabel Kaleya, head of the International Relations Department, and Ms. Joyce Gregg for their input. I also would like to thank Stefan Darmanin and Ian Borch for their participation.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I, Darren Katkuta, thank you, our dear listeners, for joining us today. I invite you to keep listening to Campus FM. The frequency is 103.7.
It's Debatable.